Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is up, Nets world? We're back. You're on the Believe in Nets podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. Big thanks to all of you for listening. If you don't already, make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Also subscribe to my YouTube channel at Eric Slater, where I'll be posting all of these podcasts, as well as interview clips, film breakdowns, other content. Smash the like button, leave a five-star review if you can. That really goes a long way. But on today's episode, I'm joined by NBA capologist Yossi Goslin to preview the Nets offseason. Yossi's formerly of Hoops Hype, now hosts his own YouTube channel and does some work for capsheets.com, but really has a great handle on the NBA financial landscape, what different teams are looking at in terms of their situations building out moving forward, what different players are looking at in terms of their market. So a really productive talk with him. But before that, just wanted to give you guys a brief surface level intro into what the Nets offseason will look like. They have four free agents, that is Nick Claxton, Dennis Smith Jr., Lonnie Walker, and Trendon Watford. And because of a clause in the new CBA, they're allowed to start negotiating with these free agents right now after the final game of the NBA season. So negotiations are underway. We've already seen one deal be reported, and that's Pascal Siakam with the Indiana Pacers, signed a max extension. But the Nets have these four free agents. Claxton, the expectation is that he's going to be back with the Nets. The dollar figure and the amount of that contract remains to be seen, but the expectation is he'll be back. And then as for the other three, Dennis Smith Jr., Lonnie Walker, Trendon Watford, I'd be surprised if multiple of them are back. I wouldn't be surprised if none of them are back. So, you know, I just wrote an article about this today, previewing and predicting the Nets free agents and what will happen with them. And, you know, those guys I think are all serious question marks and flight risks, but looking at the Nets' financial situation, they are going to avoid the luxury tax this year to reset the repeater tax. And right now, they have 11 players under contract, and they're about $37 million below the luxury tax line. So that means once they sign Claxton, you'll take away whatever amount they sign him to, and that's what they'll have left to fill three roster spots. So I said $37 million below the luxury tax line. Let's say they sign Claxton for $20 million. For his salary next season, they'll have $17 million to fill three roster spots, and they can, you know, fill those spots a number of ways. The in free agency, they'll have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is $13 million. So they can use that to sign one or multiple players, and they also have several trade exceptions, the biggest of which is $20 million generated in the Spencer Dinwiddie trade at this year's deadline. So they can use that trade exception to take a player in and absorb into that without sending out any salary. So a player up to $20 million. And they would have to use a draft pick to, you know, entice a team to give up a player like that. An example of this would be during the 2022 offseason when the Nets traded for Royce O'Neal. He was making around $9 million. They absorbed him into a trade exception, and they sent out a first-round pick, a late first-round pick, without sending out any other players. So the Nets will have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception to use in free agency, and they'll have those trade exceptions to add players, but with only roughly, you know, say 12 to 17-ish million dollars to use under that luxury tax line. They're not going to be looking at significant, you know, players to add with significant salary who are likely going to be big time needle movers. It's going to be, you know, more close to what we saw last season of them bringing in most likely minimum players, you know, who, or players slightly above the minimum who might factor into the back end of the rotation. So that is most likely the route that they are going to go either in free agency or with these trade exceptions. And then the next thing that they could do is they could make a trade, you know, and get aggressive and go after, you know, a bigger name. And me and Yossi got into what some of those names could look like. We also got into, you know, how potentially the cap space that they're projected to have in 2025 could factor into their decisions this offseason, potentially only looking to sign players onto one-year deals to not eat into that cap space. But got into all of that and more with Yossi. Hope you guys enjoy this talk. I'm joined now by NBA salary capologist Yossi Goslin, formerly of Hoops Hype and now host of his own YouTube channel. And Yossi, we're going to get right into it. We are here to talk about the Brooklyn Nets offseason. And it feels like that conversation has to start with Nick Claxton, who is obviously set to hit unrestricted free agency. And, you know, getting into Claxton's free agency, league executives that I've spoke with said the expectation is that he'll be back in Brooklyn. That's what people are anticipating around the league. So what are your expectations for Claxton's free agency in this center market pertaining to potential competition the Nets could face and what his new deal could look like?
I think he'll be back too. I don't think this is a great center market. Generally, there has not been a good center market for a while now. And, you know, every year you get the same type of reporting whenever an agent's trying to drum up his player market that, oh, this team and this team and this team that all have cap space are interested. And, you know, some of them might be true. Some of them probably isn't. And in Claxton's case, I don't really see that many cap space teams, if any, truly interested in paying whatever the Nets are probably about to pay him. So I think he'll probably get around like the projections. A lot of people have been estimating he'll get between 20 to 25 million a year, which is a pretty big range. I think he'll probably get somewhere closer to the lower end of that. And whatever they end up giving him, I think they'll just structure it where the next year's salary is decreasing just to help get a little more 2025 cap space. They did the same thing with Cam Johnson.
Yeah. And what you said about looking at the cap space teams, because, you know, there has been some fear amongst the Nets, you know, fan base going into this free agency about teams that could potentially steal Claxton away. And, you know, from my end, when I've looked at it and looked at the teams who are projected to have, you know, around or over 20 million in cap space, it's Philadelphia, Orlando, Detroit, Oklahoma City, Utah, and San Antonio. Is there anybody else in that group that you have that I'm missing there?
I mean, like, unless Utah or Charlotte, they have cap space, but they seem pretty set at center unless they just want to get him because they think he might be a good on a good deal later. Maybe they could flip that later. I just don't. Yeah, I'm just not really seeing it. A big offer out there.
Yeah, of those teams, like the only one who I see who needs a center is Oklahoma City, and they've been linked to Hartenstein far more, and who knows if they're even going to have a center. I mean, they could roll that cap space over to next offseason. Some people have mentioned Detroit, but, you know, that seems like a very weird landing spot for Claxton to me, given that they already have Jalen Duren. They signed Isaiah Stewart. He's played a little power forward, but they signed him to a contract extension. They're in the middle of a lot of organizational turnover right now. Would that shock you if they were to come out of the woodwork and kind of throw Claxton a big offer sheet?
Yeah, definitely. Especially because we don't know what this front office has planned. And you would think they're probably going to be a step up from the last front office and just maybe look to, you know, hope like if I'm them, I think they already have a lot of good talent. They already have a center. Why not just try to use that cap space? Maybe just take on some bad money, some assets, some draft picks along, because they never really did that over these past 4 years other than draft with their own selections. So we'll see. They do need some veterans, though. I think just simply this coaching change could bring them up a lot better in the standings. But I don't see Claxton as a good fit there.
So you said you viewed Claxton of that 20 to 25 million range on the lower end. So if we're talking about a four-year deal, that's coming in at somewhere probably in the four-year to $80 to $90 million range. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he got a tick over that. I've been operating somewhat under the expectation that he gets a deal in the range of what Cam Johnson got last offseason, which was 4 years, $94.5 million, as you said, descending into the second year of that contract where, second year of that contract where it will maximize their 2025 cap space. And, you know, I have to admit that for a lot of Nets fans, the idea of paying Nick Claxton and Cam Johnson both near $100 million contracts has made some people a little queasy, and I understand why. But do you feel that contracts like that, or how do you view those two contracts? And with the NBA's new TV deal about to kick in, we all know like the salary cap is going to go up. Do you think contracts like that will be viewed differently and a little bit more favorably moving forward with the salary cap rising?
I already view Cam Johnson's contract pretty favorably. It's descending for the most part. I think it's already, even though he didn't quite perform as many Nets fans were hoping, I still think that's a great contract. And be making low 20s while being a starter, those are pretty good contracts. And yeah, they'll keep the value will keep rising with the cap going up. It's going to keep going up 10%. They'll outpace whatever raises these contracts have.
And on the subject of the cap, getting into a little bit more of an overarching conversation of where the Nets are at in terms of team building. It's been well documented that the Nets appear to have two different paths that they can go right now. The first being staying the course with Mikal Bridges and trying to land a star and build the roster out now on like a 3 to 5 year timetable to stay competitive right now. The next would be trading Mikal Bridges, most likely to the Rockets, a team that had been linked to them with them having the next draft picks, and then moving off other veterans to reset with control of their own draft picks. So all signs up to this point indicate that they're on the Mikal plus add a star path and that they're setting up for the 2025 offseason when, you know, right now they have 7 tradable first round picks. That includes those Phoenix picks that appear to be rising in value, and they'll have a boatload of cap space in 2025 after Ben Simmons's contract expires. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that projection for next offseason because that cap space is kind of at the center of them starting this new window. How much cap space on your projections do you expect that they could open up next offseason?
I mean, it depends on what also happens with Cam Thomas, with De'Ron Sharpe, if they extend them. We'll see how much Nick Claxton gets and just what else they might do. There's a lot of factors, but as of now, it could be anywhere between like 30 to 60 million. It just depends on all these different factors. Maybe they trade Dorian Finney-Smith, get off his contract. But either way, like you can basically project at the highest end of that because if you want to get one of the best max players, you're going to need at least $50 million in cap space. So safe to assume that however they go about positioning themselves into 2025, assuming that is still the plan by then, I think they'll put themselves in a position to have like 50 to 60 million at least.
Yep. And, you know, as you said, I want to talk a little bit about the roster decisions that could impact, you know, that could get them to that place of being able to have that max money. And Dorian Finney-Smith was someone that you mentioned. And I think a lot of Nets fans and just people around the league have his expectation that he could be on the move this summer because he's a guy that they got at the 2023 deadline as part of that package for Kyrie Irving. It seemed like he had a lot of value around the league. They've held him through the last 2 transaction cycles, and it seems like it would be very surprising if he was still on the team. So next season, he has a player option in 2025-26, I think for around $15 million. Is he a guy that you're expecting to be on the move this summer? And if they did, do you think he's the guy that they would look to move maybe for an expiring contract to maximize or to open more cap space next summer?
They don't necessarily need to move him right now in the summer. They could kick this into the trade deadline. Maybe they need that, keep that salary available just in case a star trade does come along later. But either way, I would say that there's a very good chance that he is not on the Nets roster by the time they make it to 2025 free agency.
And then Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharpe are the other two guys who factor into the conversation of this 2025 cap space because They're both entering the final year of their rookie deals. They're eligible for extensions this summer, but it seems like the Nets are not going to extend them, you know, this offseason, you know, because they can let the market kind of dictate it next year. And also in order to maximize their cap space next summer. So that means, you know, letting them hit restricted free agency next offseason. Can you just explain how not extending those two guys now is advantageous for Brooklyn, potentially for, you know, just dictating their market value and also how it could impact their 2025 cap space?
So I went over this in my Nets free agency video. This is one of the biggest things they have. Like after Claxton, that's another decision, the next big decision they have to make. Do they want to extend those guys? So the advantage to not extending them is that if they do, that's going to eat up into their cap space next summer. And there is a way where they can have like still a lot of cap space while being able to bring back these guys later. So Cam Thomas is the main example in this scenario, because I would guess based on how he's been playing, he's probably going to get like, you know, anywhere between 18 to 22, maybe more million annually. At least what guys like Colin Sexton, Norman Powell, what Gary Trent has been making. So if they just give him that amount now, then that's $20 million eating up into their cap space. But if he goes to restricted free agency, he will have instead of a $12 million cap hold, which it's like a placeholder. It interferes with their cap space. Then they still have a lot more cap space, and then they can use it and then re-sign him after up to whatever it is he wants. And the same thing can work with De'Ron Sharpe, although with De'Ron, so his is also $12 million, but maybe with him, maybe you do extend him if his salary comes in at an amount lower than that cap hold. Because if you can just get him for something lower than that, which, you know, I don't see him as like a $10 to $12 million player right now, but like as a pretty high-end backup, if he's making like $8 to $9 million, that's less than the cap hold, then that makes sense for the Nets to just lock him up to that. So mainly in regards to Cam Thomas, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't extend him, particularly to take advantage of their cap space. The Sixers just did the same exact thing with Tyrese Maxey. They're going to have $60 million in cap space. And then once they spend it all, they can go over the cap to re-sign Maxey to a max.
Okay. So trying to explain this in layman's terms to some people who don't understand cap holds and some of what all this means, to my understanding, correct me if anything's wrong here, Cam Thomas will have, I think it's like a $12 million cap hold next summer. And if the Nets were to extend him now, say they extend him for, like you said, 18 to 22 million, that would just be gone from their cap space for next summer. Whereas if they waited and let him go into restricted free agency, they had that $12 million cap hold. And then once they use their cap space, they're allowed to exceed the cap to re-sign him. So basically, if the projected extension is over that cap hold, it doesn't make sense to extend him now, because then you're just wasting that cap space, correct?
Yeah, you basically got it. Think of it this way. If his first year salary on his next contract is going to be $20 million, then you save $8 million by not extending him now, because he's going to count as $12 million during free agency.
Okay, so the expectation is...
best layman's like explanation I can think of without showing the actual data.
Okay, appreciate that, and I'm sure a lot of fans will as well, because it takes a while. It took me a while to get, you know, you're an expert, that's why you're on here. It took me a while to get the hang of a lot of the different clauses, you know, and then we get the new CBA, and you know, a lot of this stuff is changing. So having somebody who could break this stuff down into easily digestible terms, it's a treat on this podcast. But moving forward, you know, onto the conversation of what the Nets do, you know, now we're just talking about that path that they're going to be on. Another factor in that, keeping Mikal Bridges plus, you know, adding a star, everybody just assumes that Mikal Bridges is going to be with the Nets for the long term and, you know, all of that, but he has 2 years left on his contract and he is going to be extension eligible in October, I believe. So, you know, what is he going to be eligible to sign for at that point? And, you know, why I think the expectation that is that he's going to wait, and why is it advantageous for him to wait? And, you know, what could it look like with him hitting restricted or hitting unrestricted free agency? And that would be 2026, I think.
So this summer, he can add up to 3 years, 113 mil, so an average of like $37, $38 million a year. And I think he'll, if I have to guess, he doesn't take it. One, I think he could potentially get even more than that on the open market, especially we'll see what OG Anunoby gets. I think that can really set the market for what he's going to be getting. And then the other thing is if he does it next year, he can add a fourth year at around 40-something million. So I think he's always going to be a very coveted player. I think he's still getting a little better. At worst, he's probably stagnating, which is still a really great player. So his value will still be there. I think teams will still be willing to give up a good amount of stuff for them if they needed to trade him. But with that said, the interest will be there. There will always be those $35, $40 million offers, I think, if he hits free agency.
Okay. And, you know, on the path of them potentially keeping him, just first, like, looking at what we just talked about with them, you know, the Nets, if they keep Mikhail, having that, those seven tradable first-round picks, having that, as we said, they can get up to around $60 million or potentially even a little more in cap space. You know, do you view that as a viable plan for them, you know, team building moving forward as compared to the other potential plan of tearing it down, you know, and going that other direction with the Rockets? And, you know, what are the types of players you think that they could look to be targeting when you look at the 2025 free agent class or players that can be able to, you know, become available via trade? Because, you know, as it pertains to free agency, a lot of stars aren't hitting the free agent market. You know, nowadays they seem to want to extend first and then just ask out later if they need to. So when you analyze, you know, when you look ahead to that 2025 free agent class, is there even going to be a big name you think that hits the market, or is it more likely that all those guys will be on extensions?
So as far as its viability, it's viable in the sense just that when they have the cap space to do it, a big part of it is that Mikal Bridges makes so little that you can have him being that that part of that equation. And they also have the picks to trade for stars. I don't think any of these players are really going to be available. Just the trend is to just resign, extend with your current teams. Teams after 2019, when the Nets did what they did, they took Durant and Irving, and a lot of stars moved around. Players, teams don't want to risk losing their stars for nothing. If you know, if something needs to change, they'll trade them, and that's been the trend. The biggest free agency change has been Jalen Brunson, but the only reason that was so big is because the Mavs just fumbled it for so many years, his whole situation up until that point, and then he just kind of became a superstar way after the fact. So in these 5 years since, there's been really no star movement. So I wouldn't really expect that to change for the Nets, other than having this cap space, you can use it to leverage trades. If a player like Giannis or Donovan Mitchell told their teams, hey, I want to go to Brooklyn, then in Donovan Mitchell's case in particular, he can really push his way there and force a trade because the Nets can actually sign him outright. But as I explained in my video, I was really weighing that this path versus potentially if a Mikal Bridges to Houston for the Nets pick back type of deal is still available, I would seriously consider it, because if they don't get stars, then you just kind of wasted 2 years. And then Mikal Bridges' contract will be up, and there goes that flexibility, assuming you still want to keep them. So they really, you know, they want to go for it because they have this window of financial flexibility to potentially add an all-star or two. But the longer this goes, it's like you could have potentially had a young guy or two that you really like and develop as insurance in case a star plan doesn't come to fruition.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
And, you know, when analyzing the risks of this plan, because you know, the kind of the expectation, the way a lot of people have been analyzing it, is that they can get to that 2025 offseason if none of those guys hit free agency, or they aren't able to, you know, attract that guy via trade, that star guy. They can pivot and they can trade Mikal Bridges at that point. So, you know, whatever, like they'll be able to do that. But the risk in that obviously is going from having Mikal Bridges, acquiring him at the 2023 trade deadline, when teams are supposedly offering, you know, 4+ first round picks to him. We don't know with what protections and things along those lines, but that much, you know, value and volume going to him just having 1 year left on his contract and, you know, also holding guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, like Cam Johnson. So, you know, I think at the center of the conversation is how much do you think Mikal Bridges' trade value will, if the Nets do decide to pivot next offseason and they aren't able to attract those stars, how much do you think his trade value will dip from where it is right now to when he has 1 year left on his deal?
It'll probably dip a good amount because right now most of the value is in how cheap that contract is for such a great starter. And he's going to be properly paid on his next contract. You're going to have to pay him, you know, there's no value add at that point. So that's the other risk that I didn't really get into, is that if the longer you hold on to him, the less you could potentially get back. And I'm sure just between last year's trade deadline, when there was supposedly something on the table from Houston, to now, that deal's already significantly worse for sure. So that's the other thing they got to keep in mind. You know, and I'm sure they're aware of it.
And, you know, then we got to get into like, what does this all mean for the Nets this offseason? What are they going to have to do? Because, you know, the interesting conversation has been for me, if the Nets are going to stay on this plan of trying to attract free agents or stars via trade in 2025, they're going to have to do a little bit better than they did last season. Because, you know, last season they were, what, the ninth worst team in the league for the second half of the year. They were like a bottom five team in the league. So they're going to need to show some improvement this year in order to be able to attract players like that. And the first step in that was they hired Jordy Fernandez as their new head coach. So I think they're hoping maybe that they can see a little bit of a boost with him coming in and changing some things with what they're doing on the floor. But if you look at their flexibility, it's a little bit of a dicey proposition because it doesn't seem like they have a lot of vehicles to improve their roster, you know, barring a significant trade for like a star or a big name. So, you know, when you look at them this offseason, Nick Claxton, as we said, we're expecting him back. They're going to avoid the luxury tax to reset a clause known as like the repeater tax in the CBA, which won't subject them to those really harsh repeater tax penalties until I think 2028. So when you look at their spending ability this offseason, you know, how do you analyze their routes to improve with Nick Claxton re-signing? I think they'll have, you know, somewhere roughly around like $15 million below the luxury tax. They'll have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. Like, what do you view as their avenues to improve, and what do you view as realistic for them to try to at least marginally upgrade this roster?
It's tough because the Nets, so I'm looking at their cap sheet right now. So they already have a pretty almost full roster once they re-sign Nick Claxton. No picks in this draft. And it's going to be tough because free agent-wise, I think some of the best players are going to want more than 1 year. And the only players they really have committed beyond next season are going to be Bridges, Cam Johnson, Nick Claxton, and then to a certain extent, Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharpe. And then everyone else is making a pretty small amount. So I think one thing they could do is they have these big trade exceptions. Two of them were $20 million, but I think one of them is about to expire. Yeah, the Joe Harris one, they have until July 6th to use it. So they can try to use those to bring in some guys that can help. And then the other thing they could do is trade Ben Simmons. He's got that $40 million salary. Maybe there's something they could do to turn him into stuff. But, you know, if you're trading an expiring salary like that, who might not even play next year, what are you getting back unless you're trading some picks? And do you want to trade picks to upgrade the roster just for this year? It's tricky. I don't know how they're going to go about this. They could use the mid-level exception, but as I noted, this Nets front office is really good at getting good veterans on the veteran minimum, so I'm sure they'll get a couple good guys there. But I really don't know what it is, because if they're not willing to if it's just about expiring contracts, which means getting players of the ilk of Dennis Schroeder in, you know, just solid guys, then I don't know how much better this team's going to get than how they performed last year.
And therein lies some of the conundrum with this plan of setting up for 2025, because I think that, you know, maybe you can tell yourself a story of they underperformed last year. Like, they had Spencer Dinwiddie at point guard the whole first half of the year. He didn't seem like he really wanted to be there. They got Schroeder, who's somewhat of an upgrade. I mean, they still struggled down the stretch, but like, new coach, some more continuity, maybe they can improve. But as you said, you know, and as I pointed out, like, with them, you know, going on the route of they're going to avoid the luxury tax, they're only going to have like $15 million. They have, you know, once if Claxton signs, they'll have, I think, 12 players under contract. So they have three roster spots with $15 million in space. So like, you're looking at maybe you can sign two guys for the minimum and then get one player in like the $10 million range. But that's even pushing them right up against the luxury tax. And as you said, do they want to, you know, sign multi-year deals and eat into that 2025 cap space? Doesn't seem like it. So, you know, from the free agency route and, you know, even the trade exception route, there's very limited avenues to significantly improve this roster. Another way that they can look to potentially improve the roster is making a trade, you know, making that trade for that big name this offseason. And the guy that everybody seemed to think that they were linked to was Donovan Mitchell. Now, the expectation around the league seems to be that Mitchell is going to sign a multi-year extension with Cleveland. So in that case, there's a few guys, and I talked about this on my last pod, that, you know, I think they could potentially go after in the term, you know, in the ilk of on-ball creators to kind of take some pressure off Bridges. Darius Garland potentially is one, with Cleveland potentially, you know, his management told Shams Charania that he may, you know, look to ask for a trade if Mitchell re-signs there. And then I think the other two guys it centers on are Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, with the expectation around the league being that Atlanta is going to break up that backcourt tandem. When you look at those three guys and factoring in the Nets's, you know, desire to maintain future flexibility while also improving somewhat in the short term, who do you view there as potentially the most attractive target for them?
I would say DeJounte, just because he's the cheapest of the group, and he just really improved last year. From that point, I would want just DeJounte, because then it's just another like value signing. You have Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, Nick Claxton, and DeJounte Murray all making like well below the max. In that case, him.
That makes sense. Yeah, and you know, I landed on.
I feel like he might be as important. He might not be quite as impactful as Garland or Trey, but just with the salary considerations, I think he's way more worth it.
Okay. Yeah. And from also just it sounded like the Hawks were looking for two first round picks for him at the trade deadline, but I think it's safe to assume that they'd be looking for much more for Trey Young. And, you know, Darius Garland, I think, would probably command more also via trade. And then, as you said, you know, Murray's making significantly less than those guys are on his contract. So from the picks perspective of what you're trading out and the contract perspective, he's a guy that I think could make sense. Another guy that I forgot that I wanted to throw in, and I wanted to gauge your feelings on, you know, the value of his contract and what you think he potentially costs, is Colin Sexton over in Utah, another guard that has been thrown around in some trade rumors, and a guy who's on a cheaper contract who it seems like would add some of the, you know, on-ball creation and scoring punch that the Nets are looking for this season to kind of try to help them improve an offense that was 23rd in the league last year. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think he's definitely gettable. Just about anyone on the Jazz other than probably Lauri Markkanen, unless you're really trading, you're overpaying for him, are pretty gettable. The thing with the Jazz, though, is that they already have so many draft picks. So if you're Brooklyn, you know, what are you going to offer differently? I don't know if the Jazz need more draft picks. Maybe they'd be interested in some of those Suns picks, but that's the thing with Utah right now. I don't know what's really going to like satisfy them. It'd probably have to be a little more creative. Maybe there's some players on the Nets that they'd want back. It might have to involve some players.
Okay. And, you know, one of the last things I wanted to talk about to round it out, something I should have talked about when we were on the Mikal Bridges plus adding starts, like what that whole path could look like. It's difficult to project this because, you know, things change so rapidly in the NBA, and it's, you know, just difficult to say what stars or people like this are thinking. But if the Nets stay on their path of trying to attract that big name, most likely via trade, because like you said, you know, stars aren't changing teams via free agency in today's NBA landscape. Who are some potential names? Like, when your job, you analyze teams around the NBA and their, you know, situations, and whether, like, all I see the videos you're doing on YouTube, and they're kind of all, you know, is this team in a good situation or is this team in a bad situation moving forward? So when you look at the real needle mover type guys that the Nets could potentially try to go after via trade in the next calendar year, who are those guys that you could see based on their team situation that could potentially ask out or be moving on the trade market?
So this is just what's cooking in my brain. There's no, like, this, I'm not hearing anything. This is just like what I think might end up happening. There's a reason I put Giannis on the Nets thumbnail and the Knicks thumbnail in their respective videos I made. The Bucks are just, they're running on fumes in terms of how they can continue this roster, because they are out just about every single pick and swap they could potentially have outgoing, besides their own pick of this year. And then they can't even trade their 2031 first. Maybe they can, I don't know.
After the draft, they can trade it, I think.
Okay. And then, you know, how much does Damian Lillard really want to be there? He seemed pretty set on wanting to be with the Heat only. It seems kind of unstable at the top that they went to Adrian Griffin and then they had to fire him midseason for Doc Rivers. You know, it's a lot of change for a lot of, maybe not quite what these players signed up for. So just given all, but then mainly just their, all the restrictions, all the limitations, that the roster's getting older, I could see that just that situation ending pretty soon. And if Giannis becomes available, that is the type of player that would make whatever the Nets are doing worth it. If you can bring him in, I'll then forget everything, whatever the rebuilding case, like that, then that's totally worth it. The Nets can definitely make a strong offer. I think the Knicks will probably make a good offer if Giannis is open to destinations. Maybe the Thunder and Spurs will also seem like teams that can make sense and make huge offers. That's just in the back of my mind. I just get the feeling eventually Milwaukee could be that team where stars start to move out.
It was interesting that you say that, because I talked about this on my last podcast, and Dennis Schroeder actually was asked by a German newspaper a couple weeks ago about, you know, does he want to be with the Nets long term? And he said, yeah, like, I'd love to be with the Nets long term, but if a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo becomes available, I could be traded out the door, you know, tomorrow. And I thought it was interesting that he mentioned Giannis's name, because, you know, like, players are aware of things. I'm not saying like he knows Giannis is going to leave, but they're aware of like team situations, how guys are feeling about certain things. And when he said that, I wasn't surprised. But then you just laid out some of it and I look into it and, you know, they just traded pretty much the bulk of their remaining flexibility for Damian Lillard and sending out Drew Holiday and other stuff. And then, you know, Giannis probably wanted them to do that, so it's a different conversation. But then, you know, Drew goes to the Celtics, their main rival, and the Celtics win a title. I'm sure that's not, you know, Giannis isn't too happy about that. And then they only have, you know, two first-round picks to trade this year and then 2031. And then you look at their contracts, like, they have Portis and maybe Connaughton to move outside of their core. And then, like you said, like, Middleton's going to be 33, Lopez is going to be 37, Dame's going to be 34. Like, it's not a great situation in Milwaukee, especially with how Boston is set up to just be a juggernaut in these next two coming seasons. So he's a guy that I think there's a real potential that he could be available. And you talked about the Knicks and, you know, other teams that could potentially offer things for him. And I think another interesting conversation, one of the last things I want to touch on, is if one of those guys becomes available, the Nets competition and their pick stashes compared to some of these other teams. So when you look at like the Knicks and OKC, you mentioned San Antonio, you know, these other teams that have, you know, a haul of first round picks, how do you think the Nets' pick stash and their potential package would stack up compared to some of what those other teams have in terms of draft capital and young players?
I feel like all those teams I put together, it's all pretty equal. It's just because then you have to dissect what, whose draft picks do they have, where, and it's just like a matter of your valuation, where you think that team is going to be for that, so you can project how valuable that pick is. So, and so it's just about one volume. All these teams have a volume of picks. They'll have like six plus first round picks to trade. So that makes it viable right there. Obviously the player present preference where they want to go will play into things. And then ultimately, I suppose some of the players that they can get back, if there's some young players, the Nets don't have too many besides, Cam Thomas, De'Ron Sharp, maybe Cam Johnson could be of interest. I just think they're kind of all equal in packages, and just about these different variables that are really out of these teams' control.
Okay. To close out this episode, the Brooklyn Nets announced some breaking news. Sean Marks has fired his GM and Yossi Goslin is hired as the new general manager of the Brooklyn Nets. What are your, say, first, second, and third orders of business? And what are you, you know, what would the direction that you take be? You touched on it a little bit earlier, but, you know, how are you pivoting this team into the next era if you're able to take control?
If I've got some intel that Giannis isn't coming, I would just I would call Houston, see if those picks are still available. Get, even if we could just get like the number three and the pick swap next year undone, I think that can make a really big difference towards them just getting some young players now and potentially building towards something.
Okay. Something as opposed to the unknown of the mystery chest of stars and all of those things along the line. So I think a lot of Nets fans would be in agreement with you. And I think a lot of Nets fans would really appreciate the conversation and the salary cap insight and other opinions that you're able to give here. So I really appreciate you coming on. If you guys don't subscribe to Yossi's YouTube channel, he's doing great stuff there. I think I just saw you did a whole breakdown of the upcoming offseason with all the teams and free agents. And it's really just like content that you guys aren't going to find in many other places. So go check that out. Hopefully I can have you back on the pod soon to discuss some moves that the Nets potentially make or don't make. And I appreciate it, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. It's a lot of fun and I'd love to be back.
And that does it for this episode of Believe in Nets on the Believe Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for everything happening across the sports and entertainment world. As always, I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for clutchpoints.com. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Also hit that YouTube channel at Eric Slater. Smash the like button, leave a five-star review if you can. You guys can find all of my work on clutchpoints.com. Also, if you don't already, follow me on Twitter at @EricSlater_ for constant news, updates, analysis. We're coming up on the draft here. We're coming up on free agency. You know, the Nets don't have any draft picks, but a lot of trades are going to be, you know, circling in the rumor mill, and a lot of activity is on the horizon. So I'll have more coverage of all of that here on Believe in Nets with some more exciting guests on the dock. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.